Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
A gozar este rico mambo. A gozar.
Pero baila mi mambo.
A gozar este rico mambo.
Qué bueno, bueno baila tu mamá.
Salsa, mambo, it's long been a global phenomenon, but it was born right here. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer, and today, our Vanished Venues series continues with a look at the New York clubs that launched a Latin dance and music explosion. And later, a live set from the experimental guitar act Noveller. And we mark the passing of two very different composers, Milton Babbitt and John Barry. But first, on our last Vanished Venues segment, we remembered the Palladium, the downtown rock palace. But a few listeners called in to share memories of a different Palladium, the Palladium Ballroom, where you were likely to hear this artist, the Mambo King Tito Puente. From the 1950s to the 70s, that venue and others became part of a global revolution in Latin music. And here to talk about some of those places are Elena Martinez, producer of the film From Mambo to Hip Hop, and Orlando Marin, the band leader and veteran of the New York salsa and Latin dance scene. And to both of you, welcome to Soundcheck.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for inviting us.
Elena, let me begin with you. This explosion happens in the 1950s in New York City. What was going on at that place and time that made it the cauldron for Latin dance?
Actually, when we talk about the Palladium Ballroom, which kind of that mambo scene exploded in the 1950s, the precursor to that was Cuban music had always had a big following. People went down to Havana. That was the place where people went down to gamble, enjoy the nightlife. But in the early 1930s, Don Justo Aspiazu came to the Palace Theater and played El Manicero, the peanut vendor, and that sort of like got the United States on this Cuban music love. And they called it rumba back then, rumba with an H, but it was actually Cuban son. And from then on, little by little, they started getting these groups. And it wasn't called salsa, Cuban music from the island. People listened to it But then in 1939, Machito and the Afro-Cubans, directed by Mario Bauza, they were playing in the Park Palace Ballroom in East Harlem. And they kind of debuted this music that they played mambo, but Latin jazz. You can say Latin jazz sort of originated here in New York because they took the big band arranging techniques of the African-American jazz big bands, put it together with the Cuban percussion, Cuban son, and now we have Latin jazz that starts here in New York. And you
have Dizzy Gillespie and people like that.
And Mario Bauza was a colleague of Dizzy, and so they got to know each other. And then it takes off, and then people are enjoying this music. 1948, the Palladium opens up, and until 1966, this is like this sound that's big here, but then goes worldwide.
Now, Orlando, you played at the Palladium Ballroom. You've played at all these places in a career that has spanned over half a century. You must have been a kid when you first got started.
I was the youngest kid of that era. As a matter of fact, now I am Orlando Marin, the last Mambo King of that era. I had no idea what I was doing. I just know that.
How old were you?
I was 15 when I started dancing the Mambo because there were no clubs. You had to be invited to a house party to go and dance. And I would buy records and take them to dance. And by the time I was 16, I was excited by the sound of the cowbells. I asked a friend, well, what is that sound? He said, oh, those are timbales. I went out, bought timbales. The logic as a child, I said, well, I'm going to make a group because I don't know how to play. They'll never hire me. So I got a young piano player down the block by the name of Eddie Palmieri, who was 14, and I had to pick him up and take him home because his mother wouldn't let him out of the house. And I had another singer, Joe Quijano, and a group of great young musicians like Chiqui Perez, who later played bongos with Puente, Luis Goicochea, conga with Tito Rodriguez, and a whole group like that. I got them together to the school where she made that video, PS 52. And we used to play there since 1952 every Friday. And everybody in the neighborhood was dancing.
So this is before you were old enough to be playing professionally at the Palladium Ballroom or any of the other clubs we're going to talk about. But you're 16 years old, and you've got 14-year-old Eddie Palmieri in tow.
A year after that, I was playing already in the Hunts Point Palace.
Another of the places that we
One of the first places in the Bronx to have big Latin dances, Hunts Point Palace.
Let's hear Orlando Marin in action. This is a little bit later. This is 1960, and this was recorded, I believe, at the Club Corso, right? At the Corso, this piece? Which is one of the places with the that was really important after the Palladium. Oh, no, not live, I'm being told. It's actually a studio recording, but it is Orlando Marin and the band with a song called Que Chevere.
Que Chevere means, like, really cool, you know.
It is really
How
cool.
How cool.
Let's listen. How cool is that? Que Chevere from 1960. Orlando Marin and his band. Orlando's here with us on Soundcheck today, part of our Vanished Venues series as we remember the Palladium Ballroom and clubs like the Cheetah and the Corso and the Hunts Point Palace in the Bronx. Elena Martinez also with me, producer of the film From Mambo to Hip Hop. The Palladium Ballroom was 53rd Street and Broadway, and Elena Orlando mentioned, you know, being there as a teenager, you know, starting Eddie Palmieri's orchestra and stuff. It wasn't just the musicians, though. I mean, it seems like it was a place to be seen as well as to hear great music.
What was really important about the Palladium is that before the Palladium, there was a downtown scene. You had, like, the really upper elite Latin music of Xavier Cugat playing at the Waldorf Astoria, the hotels, where they only had, like, white musicians in the band, no, you know, black musicians. It was a really upper-class crowd. But then you had, for the elite crowd, maybe not a lot of non-Latinos, and then you had the uptown with the Park Plaza, places in the Bronx, where the neighborhood people would go to dance. The Palladium was kind of really special in that it brought everyone together. And from what I've been told, I didn't go there, it was before my time, but from what everyone told me, it was just, you just had to, if you could dance, you went there. The most important thing was that you could get up there and dance. And so you had African Americans, Italians, Jews, Latinos, and then of course you had the celebrities going there all the time too. So it just became this really hot spot for the
music. So Orlando, when you were up on that bandstand looking out at the crowd, I mean, was this a kind of a vision of America that you wouldn't see outside the ballroom for many years? Did you see the races mixing and dancing together?
Oh yes, and all these people were great followers of the Latin American sound, that they called it Latin American dance music, not salsa, that came later. And it was fabulous. And I, at that age, when I was 18, 1953, is when I actually got there. There was a promoter called Federico Pagani, who was a great promoter, and he promoted all over the United States, and rather New York. And he got me and called my band La Orquesta de la Juventud, the orchestra of the youth. Mm-hmm. So I was like, you know, blown away. I would look out at the people and say, my God, why are they looking at me? You know, I really was very nervous. And I was learning on stage.
What was it like there? What was the place like?
The dancers would go there to not only dance, but to watch each other dance and to learn from each other the different styles, you know, and it was very, very wonderful. And by the way, in those days, no one had cars. You had to take the train. People from Brooklyn or uptown in the Bronx or all around, they would come by train.
And they would come to see great Latin bands, and there were the, you know, there was like the big three. There was Tito Puente, there was mm-hmm. Machito, and there was this Tito Rodriguez, recorded live at the Palladium Ballroom in 1960 in a song called Mama Guela.
One, two, three. Mama abuela.
Mamaguela from Tito Rodriguez and his band. That was recorded live at the Palladium Ballroom. This is not the Palladium, the rock venue that we talked about on our last Vanished Venues segment. We are talking about the great Latin dance craze that swept through New York and then the rest of the country and finally the rest of the world. But starting here in places like the Palladium Ballroom in the 1950s and moving to the Cheetah and the Corso, and there was Hunts Point's Palace in the Bronx at the same time. And we're remembering these venues with filmmaker Elena Martiz, producer of the film From Mambo to Hip Hop, and Orlando Marin, the timbale player and band leader and the last of the Mambo Kings. And we want to hear from you. Did you dance at any of New York's hallowed mamba and salsa spots before they closed? Tell us what it was like at the Palladium Ballroom or the Corso or Hunts Point Palace. You can give us a call, 212-433-WNYC. That's 433-9692. Or leave a comment online, wnyc.org/soundcheck. Orlando, you said before, you didn't call it salsa, that came later. Willie Colon once told me that, you know, salsa was around the year 1960, 61, 62, that word first began to, you know, people would say, hey, the music is, it's caliente, it's hot. And so this kind of like food terminology, spicy, hot, salsa, that's where that came from.
Well, if you listen to Johnny Pacheco, who was the director of the Fania All-Stars, he will tell you that the word salsa was used extensively when they went to South America because the music is originally Cuban, but then the Puerto Ricans, which were the majority here in New York, did the Latin American music, Cuban music, Puerto Rican style, and we modernized it and made it a little jazzier. So when they started going to South America, rather than confuse the people and say, no, this is a mambo, this is a cha-cha, this is a guajira, and 10 other names of different things that you play, they said, no, this is salsa. That made it easier, which was good. Mm-hmm. This is what they did in the United States with the word jazz.
Right. Now, I understand that just as Miles Davis didn't like the word jazz, Tito Puente famously did not like the word salsa.
Well, I think he would have liked it had he been the original.
Very, very well said. Orlando Marin, the timbale player and band leader with us. Elena Martinez, a folklorist for City Lore and producer of the film From Mambo to Hip Hop. It goes from mambo to salsa, Elena, but there are these other forms, the boogaloo, the cha-cha-cha. I mean, were these things one after another, the way the club seemed to have been, you know?
Well,
was there a natural progression?
There were these new styles that came. I don't think mambo ever went away. Obviously, it's still a viable form. People are dancing and playing it. But then you did have the cha-cha-cha craze came out later on. And cha-cha-cha was nice because the dance was a lot easier and a lot easier to learn, a little bit slower, and that was helpful. And then the early 60s, Charlie Palmieri, Eddie's older brother, and Johnny Pacheco came out with charanga orchestras, which was another very, very typical Cuban style that was around for a while. And you still have bands playing that today. But then in the mid-60s, the boogaloo, which was sort of like a real youth music. It was a fusion of Cuban music with R&B. They used and it really brought African-American and the Latino communities together again. And they sung in English mostly. So so here you have a lot of New Yorkers, Puerto Rican New Yorkers who might not English might not be their first, Spanish might not be their first language. English is now. They're growing up in New York City. So this is the music they're familiar with, the language they're familiar with. So boogaloo is hot for a few years, but boogaloo was a fun music. It's a great music. It's fun. It doesn't have the sophisticated arrangements and music of the mambo and the older music. So Fania brought back this sort of the Fania label. Even though they recorded some boogaloos and some other styles, they really brought back this really typical Cuban sound, although with a very, you know, New York sort of
well,
sound
the,
to
the
it.
Well, the Fania All-Stars, I mean, that was a very, I mean, they that band had New York City written all over it. I mean, they may have been doing, as you say, looking back to older sounds, but somehow in the 1970s they sounded completely modern. Orlando,
I just want to say something that what you're saying is right, except that what's always overlooked is the fact that before the Fania All-Stars, there was a group called the Alegre All-Stars from Alegre Records, and Charlie Palmieri was the director of that group, and we had all the band leaders. So when the Alegre Records went down, they sold the company to Fania, then they made the Fania All-Stars.
Mm-hmm.
And
they were a killer band.
Oh, and the style was already, but the style and the New York style and the dance was created in the Alegre All-Stars, which is very important that the people should know.
And right. And Fania, which Johnny Pacheco was the musical director of, he was Johnny Pacheco recorded for Al Santiago's Alegre label. And everyone kind of forgets that Al Santiago has this really important role. Without Alegre Records, there probably wouldn't have been a Fania Records, and people started there. And yeah. Al was a musician himself from the Bronx, had a music store in the Bronx, and then recorded Johnny, all these other local guys like Orlando and Johnny, and then Johnny was able to make his own label after that with Fania. Mm-hmm.
Well, this is a recording of the Fania All-Stars, also recorded live at the club known as the Cheetah in the early 1970s, a real hub for the Latin dance music scene. This is Descarga Fania All-Stars live at the Cheetah 1972. Fania All-Stars, live at the club known as the Cheetah, 1972, and the song Descarga Fania All-Stars. Orlando Marin, the timbale player and band leader and last of the Mambo Kings, tells us that Descarga basically means jam session. You can hear the musicians having a great time on stage at the Cheetah. Elena Martinez, producer of the film From Mambo to Hip Hop, also here, helping us remember some of the vanished venues of New York's Latin dance scene. And we have calls, we have comments, and Violetta from here in New York joining us on the line. Violetta, did you dance at any of these places?
I did, actually. I wanted to mention I'm a little bit younger. When I was a teen, Casablanca on 53rd and Broadway was the big place to go. And that was more the charanga. And that was the place where a lot of us who had come to the U.S. in the early 70s were making our transition into kind of the American world, and then so you went to Casablanca where you could have your Latin, and then the band would come and play, and the downtime of the band, that's when we danced the disco. So it was kind of a nice mix of the two.
So this is like the early to mid 70s, I guess.
Well, yeah.
And you so said did, you
yeah,
said
the latter part of the 70s.
Yeah. Okay. So Casablanca, you said 53rd and Broadway. Elena, that's very close to where the Palladium was. And 53rd Street, that was like jazz territory.
52nd Street was during the 40s was the jazz center. I mean, Birdland and all these other clubs were during the 40s were around there. And then that's what actually, not only did the Palladium bring dancers and the Latin, Latin community together, but having Birdland right around the corner from the Palladium, jazz musicians would go and sit in or visit while the Palladium dances, and the other way around too. So there was this, that's why I was able to bring this fusion, and people like Dizzy Gillespie was able to get so into the music, and then, record with the Cuban Conguero Chano Pozo with Manteca. I mean, so you just had this like fusion being able to go on, because that was a really hot area, 52nd, 53rd Street, all these clubs around there. And then I don't know if I'm going too fast, going ahead, but I mean the Cheetah was over in that area too on 52nd Street. So mm-hmm. Well, and that was originally the Palm Gardens originally, mm-hmm. and the Palm Gardens was big during the Mambo era. If anyone's seen the film Mambo Madness with Tito Rodriguez's band, usually if you've seen any old footage of people mambo dancing, you've seen Mambo Madness, because there's not a lot of footage and people use it. We put different music over it. But Tito Rodriguez's band and that Mambo Madness footage is the Palm Gardens.
And that's and also Violetta's talking about Casablanca as having disco in between the live acts. And, by the mid to late 70s, the Fania All-Stars were definitely going that direction, moving a kind of a disco groove on top of the Latin dance. Let me go quickly to our control room and producer Joel Meyer, who's been looking at some of the comments coming in. Joel?
John, our listener Alexander from Harlem wants to give a shout-out to the Williamsburg Salsa Orchestra. Alexander wrote, I saw them last night at Brooklyn Bowl. They're interpreting indie hits into salsa dura and doing a great job. And also, Christine from New York shares this memory from the Bronx. Christine writes, in 1973, I danced in all the clubs up and down Jerome Avenue, usually on the second floor. You could look out and see the number 4 train. I don't remember the names of the clubs, but they always had live bands. I never arrived before 1 a.m., and I danced till dawn.
All right. Well, it wasn't just a music scene. I think that's one of the things that we're, you know, sort of quickly establishing here, is that these clubs, Orlando, you may have been there
they
playing
were all
music.
Around. Yeah, but you see, I was very fortunate that I got to play the Cheetah. I got to play the Palm Gardens. I also got to play in Birdland in the early 1960s. Now, many of these smaller clubs came in the late 60s, middle 60s, late 60s. Well, probably the most important small club that you can mention of all of them is called the Tritons Club in the Bronx, where the pachanga originated with the Charlie Palmieri charanga band.
This was near the Hunts Point Palace,
right in that building, that big building, the Hunts Point Palace. And these people, one important thing that people don't realize about this history is that the people who were giving these functions at the Hunts Point Palace were stickball players who became an association.
Like a league?
Not a league. There's another word.
Social club?
Social club. They're the ones who gave the first dances, and they hired me because I was usually their opponent. Their team was called the Sparks. We usually beat them. They were great guys. Mm-hmm. But the idea is that in all New York, when they started giving these big social dances in hotels and bigger places, it was the social clubs, and they usually had a stickball team.
There is nothing more New York
Absolutely.
Than stickball. Let's see if we can get a final call in from Joseph in Brooklyn. Is it Joseph or Joseph?
Joseph.
Okay. Misspelled here. But so did you dance at any of these clubs?
Yeah, actually in Harlem. And I was going to say that it was a lot of African-American social clubs and high school clubs. And we went to dances every week, every weekend, you know.
And what kind of dances were they?
Latin dances. Mm-hmm. You know, Eddie Palmieri, Charlie Palmieri, Pacheco, Machito.
Right.
Tito Rodriguez, everybody.
So where do you go now? Where do you go now, Joseph, to hear that kind of stuff?
I just go to my iPod now.
Elena, is there still a place where people can go to hear this music in a live setting?
Unfortunately, a lot of this music has a lot of the places have closed down for different reasons, for economics, for different reasons, and there's not many places. But what's interesting that Joseph says about social clubs is that social clubs at one time did provide venues, places for people to play in the Bronx, in Harlem. The Puerto Rican social club, the Cabo Rojeño, became on 145th and Broadway, became a huge place where people went. So they provided immigrant social clubs for Puerto Ricans who aren't immigrants. Migrant social clubs provided also very important places. And today, as you said, what's going on today? Orlando might want to talk about what's going on today.
Yeah, and this is very important. Although the music scene for dancing here has gone down somewhat, it has gone international.
Uh-huh.
A lot of these orchestras now go to Colombia, to South America, Venezuela. They go to Europe, to all these countries, even Japan.
But the rest of us, we got to go to our iPod.
Yeah, right.
Just like Joseph said.
But the music is not dead. It's still alive, and I'm still here doing it.
Orlando Marin is the last Mambo King, and he's been with us in the studio along with Elena Martinez, producer of the film From Mambo to Hip Hop. Elena, Orlando, thank you both for helping us remember a couple of vanished venues on Soundcheck today.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
It's been my pleasure. God bless you. Have a happy new year to everybody.
Up next, new music from the experimental guitarist Sarah Lipstadt, who records as Noveller. She'll play live in the studio. And we remember two recently departed composers of very different stripes, Milton Babbitt and John Barry. This is Soundcheck.